You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, July 30th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Zephyr Teachout, running in the Democratic primary against Governor Andrew Cuomo, the lesser. Also on the program today, elections matter. National Labor Relations Board comes down with a ruling saying that McDonald's and its ilk can no longer hide behind the veil of franchise operations when it comes to workers' rights. Also on the program today, another UN refuge for Palestinians hit with bombs by the Israelis. And report Obamacare saving billions of dollars for seniors when it comes to the donut hole. We will get to that Keith Alexander story, a couple others today as well. And for those of you who are sick of Facebook, we got a wonderful alternative for you. Meanwhile, let's go to this first. Also, just a reminder, this show functions and is supported exclusively, well, 99.9% by its members. So please, if you have the financial wherewithal, become a member today at majority.fm. In Texas, the open carry people still walking around. They have a new open carry group called Come and Take It, Texas. And so Phyllis Masters wrote in The Guardian that she is now engaging in a counter-protest wherein she will bare her breasts at the last Saturday of the month to protest against the open carry group. She said the nudity and the more boobs, less guns posters, simply a demonstration of her legal rights. She writes, after all those gun rights advocates brandished their weapons at Chipotle and Target this spring, everyone knows it's legal to open carry around your firearms in Texas. Not many folks know it's also legal for women to go topless in the state's capital city. But I did. In the late 1980s, I took part in a lot of performance art that included nudity, so I was familiar with baring my breasts in public. She usually covers up in public places out of basic respect for others. However, she said the ammosexuals don't seem to share the same sense of decency, and said she was tired of the kind of people who take out their guns for playdates. It's reported in Talking Points memo. Masters and Lola got into a verbal argument with the members of Come and Take It, Texas, and she mocked the open carry chuckleheads for insulting her appearance and demanding to know who was paying her to counter-protest. She wrote, paying us to protest topless? I have friends that would pay me to keep my tits covered. The people who participated in the open carry protest do not stand for freedom. They're just there to intimidate anyone who disagrees with him. So good for her. She understand, you know, it's basic respect. It's legal for her to go topless, but she knows it would upset some people, so she generally doesn't do it, except for when faced with these morons from the open carry. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Zephyr Teachout. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Zephyr Teachout. She is a Fordham Law professor and a candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor of New York State. Zephyr, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm thrilled.
So, Zephyr, last we spoke was on my 3 to 6 show. And it was after the WFP, the WFP ended up endorsing Cuomo. You made the decision to run against Andrew Cuomo for the Democratic primary. Let's just start. You had to get signatures. How did that go?
It went extraordinarily well. We needed, under New York law, you need 15,000 signatures distributed around the state. We got over 45,000 signatures in all over the state, and people just really stepped up. And we got over 1,000 signatures in the mail one day from Long Island that we didn't expect. People were sending letters from all over the state with 5, 10, 15 signatures to get on the ballot. And initially, Andrew Cuomo's lawyer said that they were going to challenge those petition signatures, but apparently they couldn't find any problems with them because they decided not to challenge.
And, the challenge has been dropped. I know there were two, I don't know if they were teenagers or interns that had filed the challenge. Is that challenge going to go forward or no?
The challenge to the petition signatures is not going forward. Andrew Cuomo's and his campaign has acknowledged it's his campaign, using a couple of 19-year-olds, as you mentioned, have challenged, are trying to kick me off the ballot saying that I don't fit other requirements. In particular, they're saying that I haven't lived in New York for 5 years. The problem is that I have. This is a pretty open and shut case. I don't even really know what they're doing trying to kick me off the ballot, except it's pretty clear Andrew Cuomo doesn't want a serious primary challenger.
Yeah, and there's other indications of that. We'll talk about that later. But let's just start with if people voted for Zephyr Teachout in the Democratic primary, what are the issues that they would be voting for that you anticipate that they would have in the forefront of their minds when they cast that vote against a sitting governor?
Well, there's one overarching issue, which is that Andrew Cuomo hasn't governed as a Democrat. He's governed as a trickle-down Reaganomics Republican in most areas. And he's really abandoned the people of the state. So the most basic one is that if you have Democratic values, you're not going to be supporting Andrew Cuomo. The particular areas where there's a lot of energy in the state are around the way he's abandoned public schools and really looted school funding programs, leaving these overcrowded classrooms, and instead, you know, using that same money to pay for tax breaks for big banks. So that's one big area, is teachers and parents who are really feeling the pinch and seeing how we're hurting our future. A second big area where there's a lot of energy and a lot of rage is Andrew Cuomo's failure to lead on banning fracking in New York, and my belief that we have this extraordinary opportunity in this state. You know, we can really lead on renewable energy. And then the third is people who care about immigrant rights. I mean, we're having a national debate, as you know, about immigration. And Arizona is a leader in the wrong direction. It's a leader in the direction of fear, a leader in the direction of discrimination. And New York has historically always been the most open to immigrants and the most welcoming. And instead of continuing to be open and welcoming, Andrew Cuomo himself has failed to pass the DREAM Act, picked an anti-immigrant for his running mate, and just been silent on a lot of issues. And so we see that in those three particular areas, but they're all symptomatic of the bigger thing, which is, you know, I'm a traditional Democrat, and Governor Andrew Cuomo isn't.
I mean, it's been really stunning. There's a couple of things that have just stuck out for me with Andrew Cuomo, and that is his economic policies. Just, you know, for people who don't know, just recount when Andrew Cuomo came into office, he really started to slash taxes for the wealthy, for estate taxes, which impact, I don't know, literally 0.3% of the U.S. population. I'm not sure what the figures are in New York, but it's very small. And he's also instituted these tax cuts for corporations and supposedly for property taxes, which have really defunded schools. I mean, just talk about that for a moment so that people get a gist of that.
Yeah, I think Governor Andrew Cuomo thinks that people aren't going to notice that New York is so unequal right now, and the tax burden is so unfairly distributed. But just to reiterate what you said is that in his first year, the people who make between $500,000 and $2 million basically got a 25% tax break. That cost the state over $1 billion, and that's $1 billion we need. You know, we're still recovering from the crisis. Schools need it. Public transportation needs it. That's just one example. And there's a series of other examples. You know, his leadership, where he has led, is he's led on pushing for more tax breaks. He's led on pushing for repeal of the bank tax instead of making sure that the financial services pays its fair share. So, his marquee program, which he uses state dollars to fund advertising around, is called Startup New York. It's a nice name. We all want a Startup New York. It makes it sound like it's pro-small business. But Startup New York is just a tax break program. Now, what Andrew Cuomo will tell you is it's a tax break program for 10 years to draw businesses to the state, bring in new business so that we can revitalize the state. Well, in practice, most of the businesses, I think at least half, are businesses that were already here. There's no evidence that it led to more than 1% of the job growth, and yet it's costing us over $1 billion a year. So In the tax code, you know, I think he thinks he can bury it because it's all these series of small things. But if you look at the big picture, what you see is he's doing one thing. He is cutting taxes and creating loopholes for the wealthiest New Yorkers at a time when we have rising inequality and a real need to support our state.
And you know, to be fair, he has certainly been rewarded by those wealthy interests he's cut taxes for. He has a war chest of at least $33 million and shares a lot of the same funders as, frankly, as Chris Christie, it seems to me. Before we get into that, because I want to talk about the Moreland Commission and basically what the what you have been working on for years, which is anti-corruption and the corruption both of our political process through elections and through the legislative process. But also I want to touch on, you mentioned this up front in terms of what's happening with schools in this state. Just a couple of months ago, Andrew Cuomo was leading protests on behalf of investment bankers and folks like Ken Langone, basically saying that government's role, and I still can't get over this. I know we've talked about this before. He said that government's role is to protect the charter movement. I'm not even sure I know what that means. I mean, talk a little bit about what your vision is for public education in this state.
Yeah, I have a really deep commitment to public education. I myself, I went to great public schools. I know we can have great public schools. And then I briefly was a special education teacher's aide in a small rural public school, a classroom of 12, with a very patient lead teacher in a third grade classroom. But I could see that me being in the class really made a difference to work with the kids who needed a little extra help. And right now, I think parents and teachers and kids, parents are the ones who are really feeling it. They can see that their kids aren't necessarily getting what they need to become full adults. They're not getting the arts they need. They're not getting the attention they need. You know, kids aren't widgets. You can't just put them in a classroom and plug them in and hope they come out stronger. These are humans who take a lot of attention and care. And what we've seen is that with this frustration, some parents turn to charter schools or turn to other looking for some kind of magic bullet. But my belief is that there is no magic bullet around public education. What there is a need to really cultivate and care for it and fund it and make sure that public schools have the basic resources they need to have small class sizes, arts, counseling, music, passionate, curious teachers who feel really trusted in their jobs. So charter schools are coming from two places. The biggest is just big money trying to privatize our school system. The other, which, you know, Governor Cuomo and others sort of prey upon, is people wanting to run out of the public school system. But we can't abandon public schools. That without great public education, we don't have a great democracy. And that's where 94% of kids are anyway.
Exactly. All right. So let's turn to, you know, and there was all sorts of news reports that he came out for that protest because Ken Langone came in with a big check. I think it was $50,000 reportedly, and a lot of his friends did too. Let's talk about there was a bombshell report in the New York Times this past week around the dissolution and the meddling with the Moreland Commission. Tell us what the Moreland Commission is, because I know this is your area of expertise.
Tell us
what the Moreland Commission was, what it purported to do, and then what became of it.
Well, what the Moreland Commission was, and arguably still is, and this is really important, is last July, after extraordinary pressure, look, Governor Andrew Cuomo has repeatedly promised that he's going to do something about corruption. Instead, he's become part of this corrupt system. But there was a lot of pressure, wonderful activism last year, people protesting in Albany. And under that pressure, he said, yes, okay, I'm not going to pass any new reforms, but we'll have a commission to investigate legal and illegal corruption in this state and propose legislative responses because we know we have a problem. So in order to create this commission, he had to deputize Attorney General Eric Schneiderman and a series of commissioners, a really impressive group of commissioners, as deputy attorney generals. And so for the next several months, they wrote a report and then started investigating particular instances of corruption in New York State. In particular, they started looking at the ways in which business was using campaign contributions to buy policy. And they started looking at the ways in which outside sources of income of legislators might be influencing their policy decisions. So campaign contributions and outside sources of income. Now, then it was abruptly shut down without a very good explanation. But this report, this extraordinary piece of journalism, really scorching, by the New York Times, almost 7,000 words long, revealed that Andrew Cuomo's top aide, Larry Schwartz, had been aggressively trying to interfere and direct the work of these deputized attorney generals. telling them, pull back that subpoena. Don't include that name in the report. And the subpoena he wanted to pull back is a company called Buying Time with close ties to Andrew Cuomo. And the names that he did not want listed in the report was the Real Estate Board of New York. Now, the press likes to talk about this as the Moreland Commission, and then Cuomo disbanded it. But remember what I said just a minute ago, that it was actually an attorney general empowered commission. And just imagine if Barack Obama decided to start, his top aide started interfering in corruption investigations by deputy attorney generals. That's why this is such a shocking and really disturbing report. It's a really basic violation of public trust.
And now he started out by saying this commission will be independent. It can investigate me. It can investigate my staff. It can investigate just about anybody. And now he's saying, well, it couldn't possibly do that because that would be a conflict of interest. And apparently there is precedent. Even his father had a similar commission that investigated Mario Cuomo when he was governor. Do you think so? This commission, are you suggesting this commission still exists legally?
Yes. So this is where I put my, you know, look, I study corruption, and the key in fighting corruption is what institutions that you can create to fight it, because otherwise you create an old boys network that's never going to investigate itself. And that may be what we have here in Albany. But the key here is that he used Executive Order 106. Executive Order, tell me if I'm getting too much into the weeds.
Not at all. But you executive, can't possibly.
Executive Order 106, which relied on the statutory law, I believe it is Executive Law 63, Section 8, saying in order to investigate legislative corruption, he couldn't just do it with a standalone Moreland Commission. He had to actually empower the Attorney General. Well, that Executive Order 106 has never been rescinded. It's still on the books. In general, if you have an order, it goes on until somebody suspends it. So Schneiderman actually has this opportunity, extraordinary opportunity, to do something about the cloud over New York State by taking up the mantle. And the deputy attorneys general, who we call the commission members, also have that opportunity. So I have called on Schneiderman and what we call the commissioners, the deputies, to resume it, because we have a real crisis of corruption now in New York State.
And do you think that, and now I know that the governor is being investigated by Parikh Bharara, who is the U.S. Attorney from the Southern District of Manhattan, and they have a government corruption unit down there. Do you think that Andrew Cuomo broke any laws, or anyone in his administration did, by calling up the commission and saying, that subpoena you issued, we want you to pull it back. We don't want you to investigate anything that involves us. Do you think that arises to actual lawbreaking?
Well, I think it might well. And my focus has been on state law as opposed to federal law, because New York State cannot be helpless in the face of its own corruption. I think it's wonderful that Bharara is taking this up. It's really important. But New York has an obligation to manage its own problems of corruption that go all the way to the top. And if I'm governor, I wouldn't rely on the federal government to do all my anti-corruption investigations. So I've been looking more into the questions of whether it violated state law. And my lieutenant governor candidate, Tim Wu, my running mate, who is a specialist in criminal law, will be making a statement about that today at 2:00. So I'm not gonna step on his very important statement today at 2:00. But I think there's at least a very serious question about whether that violated some laws. And I think there is no question that what the top aide did, Larry Schwartz did, violated public morality. And that's what, you know, when I study corruption in history, and I'm a activist on corruption, I'm an organizer, I've led anti-corruption nonprofits, but I'm also a student of it. The most important protection against corruption is always the same thing. Do you know what that is?
Sunshine.
elections.
Elections. All right. Sunshine's probably number two. Look, you know, I left law school after 1 year, so I plead that as a defense.
No, this isn't in your law books. This isn't in your law books. This is Madison and Jefferson, and this is what the people at the Constitutional Convention were talking about when they saw the corruption in England, and they saw how the monarch had really taken over too much power and gotten full of his own power. Is the key is elections, and the people respond to corruption, not the legal form of corruption, but not the illegal form of corruption, but the legal form of corruption. When somebody uses the power of government to serve their own financial ends, or to serve the financial ends of their donors. And that, unfortunately, is what it looks like what happened here. So that's why this primary election is so important. It's important because it's a referendum, not just on the policies, but on the nature of politics itself in New York.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that because if we have on the spectrum of corruption, where it runs from essentially what rulings like Citizens United has done to our democracy, the laws that we have, frankly, in New York, which are incredibly permissive. I mean, I don't know where they rate. I know they're not as bad as Texas, but they seem to be in many respects the idea of corporate money being poured into the coffers of politicians is huge here. Where on the spectrum would you put Andrew Cuomo? On one end, I guess it's a guy getting a bag full of money doing the legislative acts. On the other end, it's Citizens United. Where does Andrew Cuomo fall in that?
Hi, well, you're asking me for like a 1 to 10 range. That's tricky. I'll tell you is I'm going to be very serious about this. We don't know exactly whether he directed Schwartz, but what we do see is the most fundamental betrayal is when you start serving your public and when you stop serving the public good. And you start serving your private ends. And that's fun. You know, that's the core here. It's not whether it's in a bag of money or whether it's a legal campaign contribution of $100,000 followed by subsidies for that same company a couple days later. So I am wary of calling any individual person corrupt, but I can tell you that Albany has a deep disease at its core. And that is a disease that we call corruption. And that is why we can't, why people's voices are getting shut out, why teachers aren't being heard, why parents aren't being heard. So I think that, my focus has been on New York State. I'm not going to compare it to other states, but I'll tell you, I can compare it to itself. And I'll say that New York is not its best self right now. And despite a long history of, minor scandals, we are at a pretty serious crisis where money is taking over politics.
And as governor, it wouldn't be just a question of your own your official behavior, but it would be about instituting policies. Like what do you see as some of the most important policies that we can impose or adopt that would help with this type of corrupting of our political system?
Well, there are a few that are just absolute no-brainers. One is we got to get rid of the capacity of corporations to donate to campaigns. I mean, what do we imagine that conversation to be when a candidate for any office calls up a corporation and says, why don't you give me $100,000? Everybody knows what that conversation is below the surface, no matter what's happening above the surface. That's a conversation about what can this state do for me instead of what can this state do for the public. So it's a no-brainer that we get rid of some of the most blatant examples where New York has these huge exceptions. But the best way to fix the system is public financing for all statewide and legislative elections. We have to build a system that allows someone like me to run for office without rich friends, being able to say, hey, I've got a really important idea. I've got the leadership capacity. I may be a bus driver. I may be a secretary. Or I may be somebody who just wants to be able to govern without becoming dependent upon special interests. And we have to build that system. Connecticut has that system. New York City has that system. New York State needs that system. Look, we also have to limit. I mean, some more outrageous is right now in New York, an individual can give $60,000 to a candidate running for governor. Now, $60,000 is about, I think it's about $20,000 over what most families make.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a single check. And people who are writing $60,000 checks do not have the experience of life that, most New Yorkers have.
I can only imagine. And you know, one of the things about the campaign finance reform that you talk about, and that I know that you have been a strong advocate for years, is that Andrew Cuomo essentially promised that four and a half years ago now, right? I mean, that's what he ran on. That was one of
another.
The...
Yes. He announced his campaign. He had the audacity to announce his campaign on Boss Tweed courthouse steps and say there's corruption in Albany that would make Boss Tweed blush, and I am your person. I am going to go into Albany and clean that up. I'm going to be tough on it. I'm going to take on legislators even if they don't want to be taken on. Now, 4 years later, I mean, I supported him. I was very excited about him. I like many people, had very positive associations with his father. And I thought, you know, here's somebody who's going to have the toughness to take on corruption in Albany. And, you know, I'll give it to him that he's been tough, and I don't have any problem with toughness. It's that when that toughness is serving your own private interests instead of being tough for the people of the state of New York, that's a fundamental betrayal. So he has continued to promise the exact same things that I'm saying here. But we know now that those words are just empty promises.
Let's briefly talk about you mentioned Tim Wu, who is who's running with you as a lieutenant governor candidate. He is a Columbia law professor. He is the man who coined the phrase net neutrality. I mean, talk just briefly, if you could, about his race against Kathy Hochul, who New Yorkers will know was. Got quite a bit of renown in this state for saying that she was going to, despite a statewide law or order that we're going to provide a driver's license to immigrants, she refused to do so. I don't even think most New Yorkers know that she's a lieutenant governor, frankly.
No, well, ever since she's been selected, she has really not made more than one or two appearances in front of the press. But what you mentioned is really important, because as I said before, New York is a state that really welcomes immigrants. And Kathy Hochul, Governor Andrew Cuomo's pick, didn't just oppose driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants, which Tim and I both heartily support. She did more than that. She ran on it. And her ads are really troubling. Her ads from just 3 years ago lead with this saying, my name is Kathy Hochul, and I led the fight against illegal immigrants getting driver's licenses. Anybody who is involved in politics knows what those ads are supposed to communicate. They're supposed to communicate that she's anti-illegal immigrant. She shouldn't even be using the term illegal immigrant. You know, that's, everybody deserves equal dignity. Nobody is illegal. So the choice of Kathy Hochul just says who Andrew Cuomo is, and the fact that he's really willing to ignore and take for granted the Democratic vote. He thinks he can run on his money and his name, but I think he has another thing coming to him.
And I mean, in large extent, you know, there's a lot of people who have speculated that what Cuomo is doing is trying to position himself in the event that Hillary Clinton does not run for president in 2016, or perhaps he's trying to position himself for a couple years down the road by essentially appealing to the you know, what I guess we used to call the moderate, old money, big money Republican vote. And in many respects, I think people are looking at your challenge as not just a New York race, but as a national race. What do you think?
I think that's right.
What do you think the signal will be sent? Go ahead. I mean, talk about that.
He's living, and I think you're right. I mean, again, without wanting to psychoanalyze him, it seems like the best explanation for his policies is the combination of serving his donors and serving some dream of running for president. But his dream of running for president seems to be running for president 20, 30, 40 years ago. He's not in touch with where people are now. And it's you know, he's refused to lead on legalization of marijuana in New York State, where there is enormous support for that. And I think that's because he's living in 1996, not in 2014. So I think he's not going to have a lot of success on the national stage, but it's also so important, and our campaign is so important, that you can stand up to these corporate Democrats. You can mount a challenge and say, look, I'm a traditional Democrat. I'm a populist. I'm a progressive. I believe in people. I believe in public education. You don't have to just sit back and watch while the Democratic Party gets taken over by people who don't share Democratic values. And I hope our campaign inspires people all over the country to run. I'm running to win, but I also want people to know that you can win without winning, and you can win by being in the race. And only by being in the race do you have an opportunity for a Brad Cantor kind of upset.
And people should understand, I think, that the Democratic establishment is watching this race. And your success is going to speak volumes as to the efficacy of Democrats running like and frankly governing the way that Andrew Cuomo has. I mean, and that's why I think this race has such importance to people across the country, not just in New York, although that's important. And one last thing I want to touch upon, because I know you've been talking about this too, is the Comcast merger. New York has a unique position to deal with things that are national issues. Explain how that that relates to Comcast.
You know, I'm glad you brought it up, because it also relates to Tim and my positive vision, is that New York has the capacity to block the Comcast-Time Warner merger in New York State. The Public Service Commission can do that. But other states can do that, too. And you know what? It shows that New York can actually get engaged in anti-monopoly laws, antitrust laws, break up these big companies that are choking our economy. And they're the same companies, by the way, that are corrupting our democracy. And I think there's been a lot of helplessness around that for the last 30 years, as we've seen this consolidation of power across the board. And so we have this really positive vision of a New York with small businesses and family farms and immigrant entrepreneurs and chains of five, and not, you know, not all CVS and Bank of America. But I think people have felt helpless in states, but states can actually lead the way. They can lead the way in stopping the Comcast merger. We can have net neutrality in New York State if we want to. We don't have to wait for the federal government to lead. And that has actually been very exciting, is giving people a sense of hope that there's possibilities in moving towards a more decentralized economy that I think people have given up on.
So, Zephyr, if people want to, across the country or in New York State, want to get more information on your campaign, they want to get involved in one way, what is the best way for them to do that?
Well, I can go to my website. There is only one website, ZephyrTeachOut.com, but nobody taken that. my last
smart
name
move,
is ZephyrTeachOut.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Zephyr Teachout. If you just go on and Google Zephyr Teachout or Zephyr Governor, I know my name's a mouthful, you'll be able to find us and follow us. And we're really relying on grassroots support. So I hope people do.
And just to remind folks, when is the primary? And are there any?
It's September 9th.
September 9th. And so everybody's geared up towards that time. And remember, folks, you know, primaries are when the most motivated voters can really have an impact on these elections.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, we don't know how many people are going to vote, but it could be as little as 500,000 people. Maybe it's going to be 700,000. You can affect the future of the country and the Democratic Party with just less than 1 million voters. So there's a real opportunity here.
And we know at least 45,000 of those voters have already signaled, at the very least, they want you to challenge the governor.
Absolutely.
I wish you good luck, and we will link to your site at majority.fm. Zephyr, good luck, and thanks so much for your time today.
It's always wonderful to be on. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Well, I wonder what Tim Wu is going to say about whether or not there's, I mean, look, you know, Parikh Bhara, prosecutors like this do not stick their neck out and unless they feel like they got a strong case. Now, I don't know how it thinks it's going to help Parikh Bhara in terms of, you know, politics to be going around like this. But I think to a certain extent, he is tugging on something. And I've known some people who work in that, not necessarily in the Southern Manhattan district, but in New York State feds who have worked in New York State on anti-corruption. And these guys are, you know, they're real prosecutors. they live, breathe this notion of going after, particularly in the government corruption units. They don't like it. And when they find it, they go after it. So, but again, you can make a big difference here on this race. I have contended for a while that this challenge, or whether it had been a general election challenge, this is very, very important to send a signal. You know, in this instance, I think Zephyr is genuinely running to win this race. And stranger things have certainly happened. But I can also tell you that if she takes a big percentage of this primary vote, it is going to send a signal to a lot of Democrats across the country. And more importantly, it's going to send a signal to a lot of people like you across the country that think these things can be done. I mean, you've got a sitting incumbent who gets all the value that sheds off his father's name. He's got $33 million in the bank. He's going to have more within a couple of months. He's got ironclad control over the different entities in this state. You know, unions have a very transactional relationship with him. And so if you're in a position to get involved in this campaign in any way you can, I would highly recommend it. You know, September, man, I'll tell you something. It's one of those things where it could be 500,000 people voting in this election. She already had 10% of that signed in the papers. You could win this election with 260,000 votes. That's pretty incredible. That's like a ground like what my student government, when I ran for student government president, I almost won by that margin. Not really. All right, folks, you can support this program by becoming a member today at majority.fm. You can also support this program if you buy crap from Amazon. If you buy crap from Amazon, you should be buying it from our link at majorityreportkickback.com. You click on the link, it takes you to Amazon. You notice no difference. It's just that embedded in there is a code that says where you came from. We get a little kickback. Or you can click on the link, bookmark it today, and then whenever you buy crap from Amazon, you buy it through that link. We get a kickback, majorityreportkickback.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Get 10% off with the coupon code MAJORITY. Buy the Majority Report blend. Pick up the app at majorityapp.com. We got an iOS app. We got an Android app. We're going to be doing updates on it soon. It's a great way to turn people onto the show. It's a free app. You can call the show. You can IM the show. You can listen to it live. You can have access to our archives, all sorts of things like that. Also, give us a review on iTunes. Much appreciated. We're going to take a break. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. If you want to be a part of this program, you can IM me, obviously through the app, or at Majority FM on your instant messaging services. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.